Thank you. Are you at home, Shauna? Using the telephone internet? You don't have internet yet, right? Waiting for Shauna to get internet. It's like waiting forever. Hello, everybody. We are here to look at Nisargadatta Maharaj. We're looking at consciousness in the absolute. We're halfway through the message on January 17th, 1981. Oh, by the way, it was a lot of fun hearing Jasmine when she was 9 on that recording. I enjoyed that very much. You know, she'll be 23 Monday. So, So I'm starting, it's near the bottom of the page. It's page 44, where there's an M, because Nisargadatta Maharaj is going to speak. And hi, Meg. Hi, George. So I am going to start there. The sum total of my spirituality now is nothing. Even the word nothing is not there. So there is no spirituality left. Suppose I do not like my body or even the vital breath. What can I do? The body is there. Vital breath is there. And therefore, this I amness is there. They are functioning by themselves. Why should I worry about it? It is having its play. Let it have it. So long as that knowingness, I amness, is there, that attraction will be there for others. The knowingness is the outcome of the food body. When this body is consumed, where is that I amness? You know, I love reading Bernadette Roberts and Nisargadatta Maharaj, you know, together, one on Sunday night, one on Wednesday night, because I feel like they shine lights on each other, right? Since they say things differently. One of the things I love the way Bernadette expresses it is she talks about how once you awaken to the absolute, the consciousness is no longer in the body. But she says that the senses are a system of their own. And the body can continue on the senses without a self. And I think that's just a very, very interesting way to describe it. And of course, to fully understand what she's attempting to describe, we have to awaken to the absolute ourselves. But I'm going to appear to go on a side here, but I swear it will come back around. I want to show you guys something. Some of you know the other night I was really excited by the puppy bowl. In this little cute lady. She was in the puppy bowl, and her name's Anise. She's part Australian cattle dog, part black lab, and I just fell in love with her. And yeah, I was like, oh, and you know, and all these dogs in the puppy bowl, you know, you can adopt. And I mean, look how much I like Anise. I'm carrying her picture on my phone, but I didn't adopt her. I'm just going to look at her picture, and you know why? Because I know. As cute as she, oh my God, look at her. She's adorable. Look at that face. You know, and look at that one white paw. But as cute as she is, and as much as my heart goes pitter-patter when I look at her, I know that if I adopted her, I would not be able to focus my meditation the way I want to. I know that. So I passed. And I'll tell you what I said when I passed on Anise. I said, once this awakening to the absolute has occurred. If this body mind still wants a dog, it can have it. But not before. And what was exactly in my mind when I said that was an acceptance to the degree that I can accept it, you know, having not awakened to the absolute, an acceptance that there's still going to be a body here. And that it's going to go on and do whatever it's going to go on and do, like, you know, maybe have a dog, maybe not have a dog. And a realization that was really none of my business. That if the conditioning wants a dog, once the awakening is complete, then the conditioning can have a dog. But my focus is awakening to the absolute. And as much as I love doggies, and everybody here knows I love doggies, right? You're all certain about that, right? I don't want anything to get in the way of that endeavor. And I know a doggie will, right? And so all I kept was her picture. And hopefully she got a wonderful home with somebody else. So listen to what he says. He's talking about the body that is still there. He says, suppose I don't like my body or even the vital breath. What can I do? The body is there. Vital breath is there. The I am-ness is there. They are functioning by themselves. Why should I worry about it? You know, that I accept that is true to the degree that I can understand it. Like, there's not this feeling, you know, there's not this feeling that when I awaken, if I want a dog, I will get one. The feeling is when the awakening is complete, if this conditioning wants a dog, it will get one. Do you hear the difference in the words? It's going to be functioning by itself. Why should I worry about it? You know, let's just assume for a moment that there will be an awakening, a total awakening, a Manonasa type of awakening. It's possible that Ron, for example, won't even know. Right? Yeah, George knows that. He's shaking his head. Because the body will go right on. The personality will go right on. But I'll tell you one of the things I see in meditation to the best that I can describe it. What I notice is what I call an intersection. It's an intersection between attention and thought. And where that intersection exists, that's where the person is. Without the intersection, there's no person. So if you take the attention out of even if you leave the thought there, right? If you take the attention out and you pull it back into what Ramana Maharshi calls the heart and you abide there, there's no more person. The person is created at the intersection. Now, on the outside, there still appears to be a person. Because there's still a body mechanism, a body machine operating. Still sounds like Gina, still wants a doggy, you know? But because that attention that was intersecting with thought has now absorbed into the heart and abides there, there really isn't a person anymore. It's what I call the code in motion, because the code creates the manifestation. The code creates the thought, right? It's the manifestation of the code in motion. Buddha, I don't know what Buddha called it. Thich Nhat Hanh, when he talks about Buddha, Thich Nhat Hanh calls it codependent inner, no, what's the word? Does anybody remember? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Codependent arising.
Is it just codependent arising?
Interdependent.
Interdependent. I knew there was an inter in there somewhere. Interdependent co-arising, right? That's what he calls it. That's what makes the body mechanism move. That's why a person isn't needed. You know, that's why consciousness isn't needed. To make the body mechanism continue to move and to continue to act just like Gina. That's what Ron calls me, by the way, Gina. You guys know me as Ra-Gina. So So I accept that as true, even though, again, it's not my direct experience. But, you know, I trust Ramana Maharshi. I trust Bernadette Roberts. I usually trust Nisargadatta Maharaj. Every now and then I wonder why, but he's the one that's a little more on the edge for me. Ramana is very solid, and Bernadette is very solid for me. You know, I trust what they say. So I'm okay. And plus, like I said, I see the person. I see the creation of the person in meditation. I see where the person is, and I see where the person isn't. Suppose I do not like my body or even the vital breath. What can I do? The body is there, vital breath is there, and therefore this I am-ness is there. They are functioning by themselves. Why should I worry about it? It is having its play. Let it have it. Let Gina have a dog if she wants one. So long as that knowingness, I am-ness, is there, that attraction will be there for others. The knowingness is the outcome of the food body. When this body is consumed, where is the I am-ness? So the way that I would say that, I wouldn't call it an I am-ness at this point. I think it's kind of funny that he does call it an I am-ness, because to me, the I am-ness is at the intersection. But what I would call it is that there is still a vital life force there. There's still something moving the body, right? And as long as there's a vital life force there, people are going to perceive an I am-ness, right? People are going to perceive another person. And of course, if it's a wise person like a Nisargadatta, they're going to be very attracted to that. But again, if the consciousness has already pulled out and the consciousness is abiding in the heart, the only thing that's left is the life force, which is animating the body temporarily. And when the life force pulls out, well, then there's nothing, right? There's nothing. And that's really what he's trying to say. He's trying to say that, I think this is what he's trying to say, that the body, which people perceive as something meaningful, right? A Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, is really not that meaningful. And, you know, and I think Jesus tried to tell the apostles the same thing, right? That it's really not this body that you perceive here as something meaningful is really not that meaningful. And Ramana Maharshi tried to tell his devotees the same thing, especially when he had a sarcoma, the body was dying. He tried to tell them, you know, it's not anything. Peace Pilgrim said the same thing. You know, she called it a piece of clay. It's not anything, right? It's not anything special. Now he's going back to where he started, this about spirituality. I agree with him 100% here. He says, there is no such thing as spirituality. Whatever is only this worldly life in the five elemental play. And then he goes on acting like Nisargadatta, and I'll read it in a moment. But spirituality is a funny thing. You know, I tell the people around here, you know, if they're listening to me, they'll nod. I tell them not to be spiritual. Spirituality to me, the way most people play the game, is just a game. It's just another image. True spirituality is something that you primarily do in private. Jesus talked about this, right? He talked about the hypocrites who were out in the streets. I guess back then they would grease their hair so it looked like they were fasting and looked like they were very, very holy. And then he said, go into your closet and close the door and pray to your Father. You know, true spirituality is what happens when none of you guys are looking at me. When I'm here in the morning by myself in my contemplation and my meditation, And also, true spirituality is what happens inside of me, you know, in my interpersonal relationships. If there happens to be a little trigger or something, the way I turn to that within myself, which again, nobody even sees. True spirituality happens in private. And what most people consider spirituality isn't private at all. You know, so it's more of a game. He's calling it a play. It's more of a play. It's meaningless. He says there is no such thing as spirituality, whatever it is. It's only the worldly life. In the five elemental play, and. And then he starts acting like Nisargadatta Maharaj again. He says, "You are nothing better than vegetation. Just as grass is growing, human beings are growing. Will anybody accept this? Birth is a material aspect. If you are yourself alone, that state will not be felt. But if there is a foreign element, only then the suffering starts. On you, the original, this foreign element is imposed. That is why it is suffering." You know, if this body doesn't really matter, those bodies don't really matter either. But most spiritual teachers don't emphasize that point. And there may be a really good reason why most spiritual teachers don't emphasize that point. Not just so all their students don't run away. There's another spiritual teacher. I believe it was Annamalai Swami, but I could be wrong. It was one of Ramana Maharshi's devotees. I think it was Annamalai Swami. Pointed out that until the awakening to the absolute, he said awakening is when the ego dies before the body dies. Therefore, take good care of the body until the ego dies. And because spiritual students can be so easily confused about the meaninglessness of the body, and maybe some of you guys have experienced that confusion at one point, right? It's not really good to emphasize that. Because it is better for people to take care of the body. You know, think of it as the vehicle. To take care of the vehicle until the awakening has occurred. So it isn't necessarily helpful to emphasize the meaningless of the body. You know, there are people who will quit exercising the body, and the older you are, the more you need the exercise, not the less. Oh my God, there's this girl named Meg Reinhart. You should see the crap she can do with her body. Was that you that I saw on Facebook, Meg? That was you, right? That wasn't an ad. Holy crap. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You wouldn't believe this woman is in shape. The rest of us, we should take a walk every day. I couldn't believe what I saw on Facebook, Meg. That was just incredible. Yeah, but we should... We should take care of the body. You know, we should eat right. We should exercise. Take care of the body while we're focusing on awakening from the ego. Yeah, her yoga. Yeah. Oh, incredible stuff. And like in a bikini too, right? You know, so it's like, holy crap. You know, like handstands and all kinds of things. You know, she really looks... At first, I wasn't even certain it was you. I thought maybe you have people post ads of other things. But then I kept looking, like, I think that's her. But yeah, take care of the body. And again, the older we are, us old folks, we actually need to take care of the body more than the young folks. Because when you're young, the body kind of just stays limber and strong all by itself. But when you get old, you start losing that. And so you need to really take care of the body. You need to eat right. You need to get, you know, move the body regularly, at least take a walk every day, you know, move things around, get some, you know, use your muscles in different ways. So it's not necessarily helpful to emphasize that the body is meaningless, because you want to take care of the body until the ego dies. After that, the meaninglessness of the body will be irrelevant, because the body will go right on taking care of itself at that point. You who will not inquire into what you are, because you are intellectuals, you will prepare delicacies out of your intellect, and you will go on eating that. Now, I agree with him 100% here. If I was just reading this book and having a lot of fun kind of dissecting and understanding what Nisargadatta Maharaj had to say, this would be a farce. It only matters if I'm taking to heart what he says, and then I am doing that spiritual practice, that meditation in private, doing the best I can to discover for myself what he's pointing to. Just to understand what he's saying, if I am understanding him at all, he's such a puzzle. But just to understand what he's saying and have the thrill of understanding what he's saying, you know, that's a farce. That's nothing. You who will not inquire into what you are, because you are intellectuals, you will prepare delicacies out of your intellect and you will go on eating that. Even in spirituality, you employ your intellect. You prepare so many delicacies out of your concepts and you relish them. Take a hint from what I have said. That you experience the world at all is the result of somebody's fun. Those parents who had sex, remember? That's why you're here. That you experience the world at all is the result of somebody's fun. Now it has become a source of misery. Like I said, he has a funny way of, it's almost like attacking people, but it's his style of teaching. He's attacking their weaknesses, trying to get them to see how wasteful they're being with their lives. You know, he's trying to poke them until they have an aha. One questioner says, is it possible to be in the wordless state? And Nisargadatta says, can you live without words? Words are very necessary. The questioner says, we are prisoners of our concepts. Nisargadatta says, just inquire into that birth principle. You are, because you are, the father and mother are. It's a simultaneous happening. Because of their action, you are. And at the same time, you have parents. Now that doesn't sound like anything. It just blew my mind, though. That's actually a very deep concept, a helpful concept. You know, one of those concepts that blows your mind. When you were born, you know, as a person, you created your own parents, assuming, of course, in this case, that you were the firstborn child. That's the idea here. Because prior to your birth, those two individuals were not parents. Now, what this really, really means is they aren't parents and you aren't a child. That's circumstantial. That's, you know, if they weren't parents 5 minutes before your birth, and now you're born and they're parents, parents can't be what they really are. 5 minutes ago, they weren't parents. That kind of hit me. The reason I really get this is because I didn't give birth. I think when you give birth, you probably feel more like a parent because you had a 9-month pregnancy and you watched this child grow inside the mother, right? But I adopted. And what happened to me was I got on a plane and went to China. And then I got on a little bus and I went to an orphanage and I walked in a room. And an hour later, I walked out and I was a parent. Walked out with a baby. I mean, I wasn't a parent an hour ago. I was still wearing the same clothes. You know, it's pretty amazing. You know, so am I really a parent? You know, and are you really a child? Inquire into what you are. This is what he says. Inquire into the birth principle. Inquire into that idea. Could you possibly be that child? Could they possibly be that parent? They were created simultaneously. What was there before that simultaneous creation of parent and child? You know, he has a funny way sometimes of pointing this stuff out, but it's an excellent point if you contemplate it. Most people just take for granted, yeah, those are my parents, right? That's not who they are. They weren't your parents until you were born. Who are they? Who are you? He goes on to say, without their bodies, what are they? Referring to the parents. Without their bodies, what are they? Try to understand what they could be without their bodies. Ignore that action. Ignore the fact that they had sex. Ignore that action because of which you are. And then try to recognize what the parents are. As a result of these two presences, there is a third presence, and I am. Now, will you clear out those concepts of yours about parents? You know, he wants you to see that same I am that is in you is in them. That same I am that you are is what they are. They're not your parents. You're not the child. It's just a bunch of I am-ness running around here. And that ends that particular message. So he's a lot of fun, isn't he? Nothing better to wake you up on a Wednesday, late on a Wednesday night than Nisargadatta Maharaj for half an hour. Because, you know, he's obviously spiritually wise, but he's also just a heck of a character. You know, he's a funny character, right? So you got to love him or not. All right, you guys, have a good evening. Bye.